Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for April 30th, 2023, the final Sunday, the final day in April. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are coming to you on a Sunday night to talk about the biggest shows in pro wrestling, as we always do, here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Next Saturday night, however, we will be going on the air right after WWE Backlash goes off the air. It's their premium live event for the month of May. And so you can watch that on Peacock or wherever you watch the WWE PLEs. And then about 5 minutes after the show goes off the air, we're taking your phone calls and emails in reaction to the show on Saturday night right here, same place. And you can call the same number that you can call tonight, 515-605-9345. And the same email address, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So we really want to hear from you, not only next week for Backlash, but tonight as we preview Backlash and talk about night one of the WWE draft, which was on Friday night, the same weekend as the NFL draft. So we're going to talk about those two. We want to hear from you. Again, 515-605-9345 is the number. And tonight, my co-host, as I usually do here on Wrestling Night in America, have a co-host from the PW Torch family this week. It is John Mazzara, longtime PWTorch.com contributor. John, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me back. It's always fun, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to get your thoughts on the draft. I'm going to try to keep mine a little closer to the vest because my column in the upcoming Torch newsletter are going to be my winners and losers from night one of the WWE draft. So I will just kind of save that for the paying customers of the Torch. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you can go to become a member of the Torch family if you are not already. So first, John, let me just go through the draft results from night one. Half of the roster was eligible to be drafted on SmackDown. Half the roster will be eligible to be drafted tomorrow night on Raw. So SmackDown gets Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, and Paul Heyman. They all came as a package deal. Bianca Belair, who is the Raw Women's Champion. The Street Profits, Edge, Bobby Lashley, AJ Styles, the OC, and Mishen, who are all grouped together. Damage Control, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, the NXT Women's Tag Team Champions, Hit Row, and Lacey Evans. To Raw, Cody Rhodes, Becky Lynch, Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci, Matt Riddle, Drew McIntyre, The Miz, Shinsuke Nakamura, Indy Hartwell, The Viking Raiders, Dexter Lumis, Candice LeRae, The Maximum Male Models, Zoe Stark and JD McDonough from NXT, Apollo Crews also from NXT, Natalya, Sonya Deville, Chelsea Green. And there are three free agents who, as my understanding, will be able to go from show to show, Omos and MVP, Mustafa Ali, and Dolph Ziggler. So, John, we had WWE Legends and Hall of Famers come out and read the names off a card. Raw and SmackDown had their own locker rooms where we didn't see who was making the picks, but we were told by the announcers that decision makers from each brand were making the picks. So this is always a bugaboo for fans every year. It's this the unanswerable question of the rules of the draft, who's making the picks, was that satisfactorily answered for you, or is that not a big deal for you? How do you think the machinations of the draft this year played out on night one?
Yeah, it is not satisfactory, but at the same time, I did not expect it to be, so I can't, like, say, oh, I was very disappointed that they didn't. I will say I like the idea because a lot of professional sports do this with drafts where they'll have, not for every pick, but, you know, sometimes they'll have some kind of you know, former player, some kind of team ambassador who will announce the picks. And it's kind of a little cool thing. It's a nice way to honor, you know, a former player, somebody from the team who's important to that team. So I like them having those kind of representatives. But and I will also say this, and I'm guessing you'll agree with me, a few years ago when they had ridiculously overacting people like in boardrooms who were like jumping up and down and stuff as like the Raw people and the SmackDown or the Fox people and the USA Network people, whatever it was worse than this, but it just doesn't take that much to, and I saw somebody had written online, and I think it's so true, and I apologize to whoever it was, because it wasn't me, but I don't remember who it was, but basically saying, like, let's not call, you know, it's a roster split, not a brand split. You gotta, if you want it to be a brand split, have, you know, Adam Pearce and give the other show to somebody else, you know, Pearce on Raw or SmackDown and somebody else. Have a different look beyond the color ropes, you know, and they've done some stuff like that in the past where maybe they move one of the announce crews up to the by the ring, like where AEW has it. You know, you can do different things, have that where it's just, and again, we don't want, you know, used GMs, but, you know, the Adam Pearce style, the William Regal model, hey, it could be William Regal, you know, just to have it, if you're going to really do it, then do it and make it a little clearer and make the rules a little clearer. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you got these are the player or the players. These are the wrestlers who are available for the draft night one. And here's the ones for night two. And you have the draft. To me, like, shouldn't the other people who didn't get drafted just stay on their show? Like, why do we need, like, every single player to be drafted the next day in a supplemental thing on Peacock? And I'm sure we'll get the same thing after night two tomorrow night. So just, if you want, have the big names move, because that's who you would like to draft. And then you can always do, like, oh, they worked out, like, a three-for-three trade with some of the more, you know, lower mid-card guys if you want to make a few other changes. The idea that, you know, at some point somebody's going to be drafting Dexter Lumis, like, why? Like, I would be like, no, I know he's on Raw already. I'm hoping that other people get him. I mean, it just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. They made such a big deal about, you know, potentially this isn't the last time we might see all of, you know, Imperium together. This is the last time we might see all of, you know, Damage Control together. Oh, no, they just drafted all of Damage Control. They drafted all of every team except for the Bloodline, and we'll see. There's some interesting potential things to happen tomorrow night with the Usos, but, and I don't even mind that because I thought it was really silly when the one team or one show drafted Big E a few years ago when they could have literally drafted all of New Day. But they were just like, no, we don't want Kofi and Xavier. It didn't make any sense. And I get why they might want to do it from a behind-the-scenes standpoint. But from a, you know, a kayfabe standpoint or whatever you want to call it, you got to have some logic to it. So it makes perfect sense. If I can get all of Imperium, why wouldn't I take all of Imperium if that's how it's done? So they don't, you know, make the rules clear. They don't make things consistent. They don't have a clear person making the decision, just some, you know, person behind or people behind a closed door with a Raw logo on it. So from that standpoint, other than the guest, you know, people who had little fun moments like RVD or Shawn Michaels, and I got a kick out of, you know, Michaels getting upset that he's losing, you know, NXT people. You know, that stuff makes sense. So it's not all bad, but it's mostly bad.
I mean, RVD getting to draft Matt Riddle and the Street Profits. Like, I mean, come on, that's somebody was having some fun there with that. You know that.
Definitely.
As someone who is a huge NFL draft nerd, it bothers me to no end how little care and thought WWE puts into this process, because it could mean so much more. You know, the NFL draft has become such a cottage industry. And I'm not saying that this could be the same thing for WWE, but it could mean more than it does if they put just kind of an ounce of thought into it. And part of that is, you know, who are these people representing Raw and SmackDown drafting these wrestlers? And I don't want it to seem like I want to return to the days of the, you know, the general manager who, you know, every storyline, you know, they're on TV 6 or 8 times a show because they have to make decisions. Right. Like, I don't want that, but I think you're right. The Adam Pearce, the William Regal type general manager, and Adam Pearce, as far as we know, is the only on-screen WWE authority figure. So, okay,
right.
Is he drafting for Raw and SmackDown? Is it not Adam Pearce? Is it somebody else? I mean, it's kind of strange how we go into this draft and WWE gives us no information on the people actually making the decisions. I mean, you kind of joked earlier about, you know, the USA and the Fox war rooms when they were drafting back when Fox first got SmackDown. I mean, yeah, it was silly and yeah, it was over the top, but at least it made sense. At least it made, you know, we know who's drafting them. It makes sense that Raw and SmackDown would be drafted by the networks because they're appearing on the networks, so that the networks want the best people on their show. You know, it makes sense that they would do it that way. So at least they put a modicum of thought into it. This time, of course, they didn't. I did like the legends making the cameo appearances to make the announcements. I thought that was cool too. And as you said, very similar to how the NFL does it with legends for each team coming out and announcing their picks. So yeah, there was that. And, you know, it just, it could, like I said, it could be so much more. But yeah, I mean, let's dig into it a little bit here. You know, I would say any surprises, but there wasn't anybody split up. Let's go to NXT. I mean, because I think that is where the biggest surprises lie in terms of the call-ups. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn getting called to SmackDown. Raw getting Indi Hartwell, who is the NXT Women's Champion. And then you've got Zoe Stark and JD McDonagh and Apollo Crews going to Raw as well. So, you know, to me, the biggest surprise there was Fyre and Dawn. I did not see them as, you know, obviously they're talented. Obviously they're on the higher end of the women's wrestlers, actually bell-to-bell wrestlers in NXT. But that doesn't always cut the mustard in WWE. You know, that sometimes doesn't mean everything when it comes to call-ups. So I was surprised at that. Not so much with Indi Hartwell. It kind of feels like she's done just about everything to do in NXT. You know, she has the natural main roster storyline with The Way, with Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano, with Dexter Lumis on Raw as well. So she's got that natural storyline. Zoe Stark's been on Main Event and been doing dark matches for a long time. Again, another one of the more talented in-ring performers in NXT. JD McDonagh and Apollo Crews. Not really surprises there either, I don't think. But who was the biggest surprise for you from the NXT call-up list?
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about it too much ahead of time. So I wasn't really thinking other than, you know, some of the big names. And I think Zoe Stark is one, like, I had kind of assumed at some point soon would get it. But yeah, I wasn't too surprised by any of them. I guess I was maybe a little more surprised by Indi Hartwell than you, just because I'm not convinced she's ready. But then I think you're also 100% right, where it's like, she's been at AAA long enough, and at some point you got to let her sink or swim in the big leagues, and it does make some sense. I don't know if she's hurt from last week, the knee or whatever it was from that bad fall during the main event. Hopefully she's okay, or if not, she can it'll be interesting to see, does she if she's, you know, sidelined for a while with an injury, if they are able to work her in you know, in a managerial kind of role until she's healthy again. So that'll be interesting to see, and what happens with the, not only the women's championship, but we know that Isla Dawn, or as Michael Cole called her, Isla Dawn, and Alba Fyre have
big
a
big NXT
tag
viewer, that Michael Cole.
Yeah, good job. And I'm just sitting there, and I know it's better that Vince McMahon's not screaming in their headsets the entire time, but somebody's got to be, like, correcting him the first time he says it. But Anyways, they have their title defense next week, so the predictable thing would be for them to lose to Carter and Chance, who have done a pretty good job, I think, in the past. I kind of looked at them as a team that might get called up for the same reason as Indy Hartwell, where how long are they going to be a tag team in NXT, and at some point do they need to get that call up to grow as performers? And also because of how thin and inconsequential the women's tag team division on the, you know, both Raw and SmackDown, the kind of combined rosters has been, that pumping some new blood into the women's tag division would have made some sense. And they are getting Dawn and Fire, although I'm not necessarily convinced that they are, you know, are they best as a team or ultimately as singles competitors.
Do you see any NXT call-ups for the night two of the draft on Raw? And if so, who do you think would be the betting favorites there?
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a few. I never saw if there was like a list of eligibles like they had for Raw and SmackDown for the two nights.
I don't think there was.
Yeah, I don't think there was either, but I may have missed it. But I think Grayson Waller makes a lot of sense. I think for me personally, he's the most well-rounded of their male superstars. Oh, God, you said superstars. I apologize. but his in-ring work, his personality, his mic work, to me is so strong. I think he's ready and doesn't seem to have anything at this point kind of going, I think, in NXT. So, and I know a lot of people are expecting Bron Breakker. I'm not nearly as high on Bron Breakker. I still am not convinced he's particularly good at anything, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't enjoy his matches all that much. I don't think he's very good on the mic. He's got a name, and he doesn't even use the name. He's got a good look, but I think a lot of people might be surprised that he's not that big, and it'll be interesting once he, you know, if he's standing next to some of the bigger guys. Not that it should matter, but if his thing in NXT is, look, he's big and powerful, and then he's not really that big and powerful, that kind of, you know, takes away. But I think Waller, I think, Melo is certainly a possibility, you know, really good in the ring. He's got a lot going for him. But again, and I will say, I meant to mention earlier, if it were a real sport and you're really trying to draft the best people, I like the fact that they drafted the champions. Like, you want the best woman from NXT? Well, draft the woman's champion. That makes sense. So, you know, Carmelo getting drafted would make some sense from that standpoint. But Grayson Waller is definitely my top pick, whether I'm doing it myself or predicting who is going to do it. In this case, it's the same answer.
The thing with Bron Breakker since his heel turn, and I don't know if this is purposeful on his part or not, but his promos sound a lot more like Scott Steiner since he's turned heel. Like, and I don't know if he's channeling Scott or if that's just, you know, the family voice coming out, but it is very clear that he is, even though he's Rick Steiner's son. I mean, those promos sound a lot like Scott Steiner, just in their inflection and tone and everything like that. I would throw in J.C. Jayne and or Gigi Dolin as well. I think they've gotten a big push as part of Toxic Attraction. Obviously, they're now feuding with each other, but either one of those two could be main roster bound on Raw as well. Anything else jump out to you from the list? I mean, what do you think of the free agents? I mean, this is new. Omos, Ali, and Ziggler, I guess you would call them undrafted, but they, per the rules, are going to be allowed to bounce from show to show. So they are going to have at least a few wrestlers, and we don't know if this will come out of the Raw draft as well, whether or not there's going to be a few wrestlers who fall in the same category, but they are going to be allowed to go from show to show. So that's an interesting wrinkle that they've put in. I'm not really sure that it's going to mean a whole lot, but what did you think about that?
I was mostly confused by it because I didn't understand the implications. I was just like, at first I said, oh, well, I'm assuming that just means that after night two, there will be an additional three or four names that go undrafted, and then ultimately they would sign with one or the other. And then I read something that suggested, like what you're saying, where it's like, oh, they'll be able to bounce back and forth. Is that just – I don't know. So it is interesting. I would like, you know, more of a hard brand split if you're going to do it. I guess I'm kind of resigned to the fact that if that means a few people kind of are free agents and can appear on both, but most of the bigger stars are – cemented to their actual brands, I would take that, as opposed to in the past when they've had these various, I'm blanking, Greg, on what they've called them, but where it's like, you know, somebody from Raw can appear up to 3 times a year on SmackDown as part of the such and such. You know what I'm, you know, they've done.
Yeah, they did that. Different. They did that once. What a disaster.
Yeah, so, I mean, if this is all it is where you've got a few lower card guys like Ziggler and Ali and maybe a few more get added, you know, an Elias or something where you just maybe need some jobbers to float around. I guess I would take that if you have to have it. I'd still just ultimately prefer just have here's Raw, here's SmackDown, and there's no interaction. You know, that would be my preference.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of read it the same way you did where it's like, you know, bring as opposed to jobbing guys who are on the brand and who might have value at some point in the future, you can use these. Obviously, Omos does not fall into that category. You're not going to throw
right.
him out there to job in 2 minutes to somebody. But certainly Ali and Ziggler would fit that bill, I think. If you need somebody to do a job or, you know, have even a competitive 10-minute match or whatever like that, but you want to get somebody over and you don't want to do it at the expense of someone else on that brand's roster for whatever reason, these are guys that you can throw in there and do that with. That's kind of my read on it. It could be made into a storyline, who knows, but anything else jump out to you from the lists on SmackDown and Raw after night one of the draft?
Well, I think the really big talking point, and we haven't touched on it, is the whole Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, New World Championship situation where a lot of people had said, well, you can't have Cody going after this new title because it's going to seem like a consolation. He didn't get the job done against Roman at WrestleMania. Now he's going to win this new title, but that's not the story. He's finishing the story. That's not the story. So I kind of thought he would end up, and I think most people assumed he would be on the opposite show from Roman, which is what he is. I kind of went the other direction. I was like, well, you have to have him on the same show as Roman so that he can, you know, not be chasing this new title. And I kind of, the thought occurred to me after he was drafted to Raw, knowing that the world title will be there, it's like, well, which is worse, Cody winning the consolation prize or Cody not winning the consolation prize?
Yeah.
And either way, it's not a good, I don't think, situation for Cody. And this is someone coming from me who, you know, I was perfectly fine with Cody at the time not winning. I would have been fine with him winning. I wasn't like strong in either camp. I felt they could really tell a story and do a good work moving forward with either Roman or Cody winning that match. But now in hindsight, I'm just kind of like, God, if this was the plan, like Cody should have just won it and kept the one title where Cody is able, because he's not Roman with his, you know, part-time schedule, you know, you could have Cody defending it on both nights. Or both shows, you know, kind of 1 month maybe on Raw, then the next month he's defended against somebody on SmackDown. You know, you could do that. But I get why they wanted to create a second title because of the Roman's contract situation. But it's just, it's not great for Cody, who gets really good reactions, has, from what I've read, has been one of the top, if not the top, merchandise seller in the company. It's like he's really set to be potentially your top babyface star, and now because of this other title and this whole draft situation, I don't think he's in the best situation going forward.
So let me run this by you, because I think you bring up an interesting point with the belts, right? And you pointed this out, if Cody wins the new belt, it will seem like a consolation prize. He couldn't beat Roman, whatever the case may be. But if he doesn't win the belt, it'll seem like, man, you know, he couldn't even win that belt. Like, you know, so it will feel like a big step down for him. is there a way that they can thread the needle here where Cody says, I don't want to go after this new title because my focus is solely on Roman and his title? Almost kind of like Wardlow did when he refused to go after the interim title, and they used that as the excuse that he wasn't part of that, going after the interim title because he wanted the main title or whatever the case may be. Can they do something with that, like that with Cody, to kind of, again, thread the needle so it doesn't seem like either way it's a negative for him whether he wins that new title or not?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible they can do that for sure. It may draw some negative comparisons to him not being able to challenge for the world title in AEW after he lost his, you know, the first match when MJF, you know, turned on him. Is that too similar to that where, and again, that was his own decision, was to say, if I don't win the title now, I will never challenge for it again. And this would be his own decision saying, I don't want to challenge for it. And it doesn't paint the title in the best picture, even though that's perfectly logical for him to say, hey, this, my whole point was I want to win the title my dad never won, and that's the one Roman has. I mean, that's perfectly logical. But it doesn't necessarily paint the new title as being particularly interesting, as opposed to, you know, what Seth Rollins did last week on Raw, where he kind of made it clear, you know, if he's still on, you know, if he's on the show with the title, how, you know, he's going to be the first champion. So, yeah, it's tough. But, yeah, they can certainly do that, and there is the storyline purpose. But then at that point, you're basically like, you got Money in the Bank and the Royal Rumble. And that's really it as his avenues to switch brands and challenge Roman at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've reached the bottom of the hour here. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor John Mazzara. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you're listening live. To join in on the conversation, wnialivecast@gmail.com is our email. It's open anytime that you want to email us, have any questions about any of the big shows in pro wrestling. Let's go to our first phone call tonight. It's from 814. This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind?
My first question is on Bad Bunny. Do you have any idea who's training him for his match against Damian Priest? Because that's one of the featured matches on the premium live event.
I do not know. I'm assuming it's the same person who had trained him before his other matches. You know, WWE has a long list of people that they can call upon to train. I know Drew Gulak has trained some celebrities that have come into the ring and guys like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be trainers from the WWE Performance Center. It could be wrestlers that are on the active roster, like Gulak. It could be, you know, I know they farmed out training to other people who have wrestling schools as well, John. So I don't know particularly, but there's certainly no shortage of people who can work with him.
Yeah, and, I mean, Damian Priest would have made sense since he worked with him in his first match as a partner that time, that he would have been part of him training for that match and continuing to train as his opponent this time. But I don't have I don't remember hearing about it, and I was just kind of looking up on his Wikipedia page just to see if I could see anything, and I'm not seeing anything on there that says, you know, he trained with so-and-so. So nothing specific I can add to it, but I think Priest would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those matches where you know, they don't always do this, but when you have a big match with someone who is not, you know, trained or does not have a lot of experience, a lot of times they will work out the match ahead of time. And so you wonder, it's hard with Priest because he's, you know, on TV every week, but if there's a way to work around Bad Bunny's schedule and to, you know, set up a ring somewhere, or maybe not even a ring because it's a San Juan street fight, so I don't know how much time they're going to spend in the ring, but this may be one of the matches that you try to work out a little bit ahead of time so everybody's very clear on what they're doing. Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
My second question is on AEW's new shows, especially that they're getting. heard a report that they're getting a better wrestler to either return or make a debut. Any want to make a prediction on who that could be?
CM Punk?
No, in addition to CM Punk.
What's that, John?
The report was that there was somebody in addition to CM Punk.
Oh, okay. Well,
I had seen the same. I had seen the same. Yeah.
That's cheating. I think I get credit for that. I don't remember Ryan said besides CM Punk, but it's so hard to say because I don't know who would be out there, you know, short of Sasha Banks or someone like that. I don't know who was out there as a free agent that would make that kind of impact. John, any ideas?
Well, I know the report was either a returning or a new signee. And if it's a returning, Miro jumps to mind because where has he been? And obviously he's got a pretty good following and a lot of fans have felt he's been grossly underutilized by AEW. And so I think Miro is a possibility. I mean, I think Sasha Banks, certainly Mercedes Moné, no, Money, Mercedes Money, I believe, would make some sense. I know she's re-signed with New Japan, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's an exclusive, you know, situation. And obviously with Forbidden Door and other working relationships with AEW and New Japan, that wouldn't preclude it. So she would certainly make a lot of sense if it's a new signee. So I guess those are my two. If it's a returning, I go Miro. New, I go Sasha because, I unless I'm just blanking on somebody out there who would be a big enough name, because there are some, you know, more independent names or maybe somebody from another New Japan defector or something. But I think if you're really trying to get a big name, you want something a little bit bigger than that, and that means WWE. So I'm not sure who else would fit the bill.
All right, Ryan, your third and final question for us.
Okay, final question's on RVD. I saw him wrestle last night on a local indie show. How common is it for them to show up on SmackDown the day before then get to see him in action at your local indie show?
My guess is pretty rare. I'm sure it's happened before, but RVD obviously only in for a one shot there, not even wrestling there on SmackDown. So, as long as he can make his bookings, hey, why not take an appearance reading off a cue card on SmackDown?
Yeah, and I would bet it's happened with the Royal Rumble in the past. I bet there's been some, you know, guests in the Rumble who appeared the night before or the night after, probably more likely the night before, at a local indie show, that type of thing. But, yeah, it's not too common that you're going to get something like that.
Happened at WrestleMania with the Hardys in ROH and then showing up re-debuting at WrestleMania.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Some similar, not exactly the same, obviously, but similar. Ryan, thank you for the phone call this evening.
Yeah, I was really concerned he was going to miss that show because of his flight delays in Texas.
Ah, yes. RVD, nothing if not punctual, I suppose, right? That's what he's known for. All right, let's start previewing Backlash here. We got almost a full card, perhaps even a full card, depending on how long the show is scheduled to go. Let's start with Matt Riddle and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against the Usos. Owens and Zayn retaining the tag titles on SmackDown on Friday night. So the Usos, you know, Paul Heyman certainly seemed like he was passing on the message to Solo Sikoa to, I don't know, maybe take out the Usos. Before Sikoa could get to the ring, though, Matt Riddle attacks him. So we don't know what Solo Sikoa would have done had he reached ringside. But certainly already in the bad graces, I guess, the opposite of good graces, of Roman Reigns, and now they lose in a rematch for the tag titles, The Usos are expected to be drafted either to Raw or SmackDown on Monday night, and this would seem to push their chances a little more toward Raw, if you ask me. But, you know, here we have Riddle, Owen, Zayn against the Usos. Six-man tag action, Usos, and I believe Sokoa. I didn't have that written down, but
yeah.
What do you think about Matt Riddle being a part of this story? Do you think has it clicked for you, or does he feel like kind of a third wheel with Owens and Zayn?
I think it's somewhere in between. I think it's been pretty good, and it made some storyline sense since Sokoa was the one who, you know, quote-unquote injured him when he had to take time off. So it made, you know, perfect sense that he would want to come back and get revenge. And we've seen a little bit more of the serious Matt Riddle, which is good, you know, where he kind of acts like his goofy self and then kind of turns it more seriously. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Here's what we're going to do, you know. And I've liked that. I thought what he said this past week about, you know, his history with Randy Orton and how everyone always predicted, you know, Randy was going to turn on him, so don't listen to, you know, the Usos saying that Kevin's going to turn on you because,
yeah,
you know, Randy never, you know, I thought that was a nice touch. But at the same time, just anyone, and it's nothing against Riddle, I think anyone, because the KO and Sammy have been so connected to each other and so connected to the bloodline going, you know, into a main event at WrestleMania, that anyone being added is going to feel a little bit of a third wheel. So I'm not trying to, you know, take anything away from Riddle or his performance. And as I said, it made sense given the storyline and who else. At some point they need a third guy, so that makes some sense. Like, who is that third one going to be? And Riddle, you know, makes maybe the most sense as the, you know, coming back and getting a nice, you know, baby face pop for his return. So, you know, overall it's been pretty good, and I think, you know, I am hoping, I will say this, the bloodline should not break up via the draft. Like, that's weak. So let's hope the Usos get drafted to SmackDown, because you can do so much more with them ultimately breaking off on their own or being kicked out or whatever it is, however they go, than just like, oh, well, we got the bloodline blue and the bloodline red. I mean, like, you know, no, let's not do that. But that is kind of my concern.
It worked for the NWO, right? NWO Black,
yeah,
and White, NWO Wolfpack. Oh wait, no, it did the opposite.
Well, it works more. It works more for the Wolfpack than the
sure.
Black and White. If I remember correctly, that was a pretty uneven split of that faction.
For sure. For sure. So what do you think happens? I mean, what happens even if the Usos stay on SmackDown with Roman Reigns and the Usos? I mean, does he excommunicate them to the island of irrelevancy like Paul Heyman's friends? Like, what happens there?
Yeah, it's so interesting because you usually, like, want that baby face to break away and not be kicked out. You know, we saw it with ultimately Sammy. And we've seen it the other way with going, there's so many examples. The one that always jumps to my mind is Randy Orton being kicked out of Evolution, and that just set him up for failure from the start as a young, first-time kind of solo babyface. So if you're passionate about this story, and I think a lot of fans are based on the success and the ratings and everything else that this has carried for so long, you want...
Basically every metric.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you want it to have a strong ending, which is that, but I don't know what that ending is. Is that, you know, Jey Uso finally standing up for himself like he sort of was trying to do in the very beginning of this storyline, and the Usos finally just having enough? I mean, you could obviously make a case if Roman's mad at them for losing, and he could be like, well, we're the only reason you're winning. So if we had you in our corner, maybe we would have won, because that's the only reason you won. You know, there's a lot you can do with that. But you also have to keep, you know, Roman as strong as possible. So I'm not really sure what the best is, but there's a lot of storylines either way. You can move this in multiple directions, which is part of why this storyline has been so successful for as long as it has been, because you could see them going this way with Sammy. You could have seen Sammy break off last year, and instead they kind of doubled down at Survivor Series in the War Games, you know. So it's a good problem to have, I think, where you've got different potential storylines and keeping the fans on their toes.
Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar. This is a very intriguing matchup for several reasons. I think if you were to say that Cody Rhodes was going to lose at WrestleMania, and then I asked, okay, well then what is the follow-up? And you were to say Brock Lesnar, there's some level of intrigue there. Like I still wouldn't have been on board, you know. I think that's probably making the best of a bad situation in terms of following up to Cody's loss. So that we still haven't really gotten the explanation yet from Lesnar. Do you anticipate that happening, or are we going to go into this match just kind of looking forward to hopefully Cody Rhodes regaining some level of not respect, but some level of momentum after it was stopped so quickly at WrestleMania?
Yeah, I hope we get an explanation. I'm not sure we should be anticipating one. All we've had is kind of Corey Graves saying, well, I've heard that he was upset that his match was first and Cody's was last, which is...
Beak.
Yeah, and even if that's the case, it's always better for the wrestler to say the reason than for an announcer to say, this is probably the reason. So, I mean, I'm hoping we get something, but of course, you know, Lesnar's not known, you know, as, you know, the greatest talker, although he's better than I think even WWE thinks he is, and he's done a pretty good job, but that's been more in the just the cowboy Lesnar having fun, coming out there, working with some heels, and some of the stuff he's done, like with MVP, you know, before WrestleMania, so he can certainly come out and just give a short promo to say, you know, hey, Cody, this is why I kicked your ass the night after WrestleMania, blah, 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 and I'm going to do it again on Sunday. I mean, it doesn't take that much to just fill in the blanks and then ultimately, obviously, hopefully setting up Cody for a big win.
I think that's been sort of the disappointing aspect for me with this is not that I don't think Cody and Lesnar is a very intriguing matchup, because I do, but I was having so much fun with babyface cowboy Brock Lesnar that it was kind of sad to see it go so soon.
Right. That is true.
Yeah.
And now he's like Black Bart like Lesnar something. I don't know.
There's a comparison.
Yeah.
Maybe the only time those two have been compared to each other in history. I don't know. Match number three that we'll talk about here is for the SmackDown Women's Championship, Rhea Ripley versus Zelina Vega. LWO has really taken WWE by storm. They've been getting some good reactions in the arena. They're selling a lot of merchandise. Still, it is surprising, and maybe WWE had set this match up before they knew the level that the LWO would rise to, but Zelina Vega, who is a part of that group, it almost feels like they should have kept her away from Ripley for a little longer to continue building. You know, you have Bianca Belair, who's the Raw Women's Champion, going to SmackDown. Rhea Ripley is going to be drafted tomorrow night. You have to imagine she's going to be drafted to Raw, although Belair and Ripley have on more than one occasion teased getting together. Potentially, I think maybe if not unifying the titles, then doing something like Reigns and the Usos have done, where one person is going to hold both titles. That's a possibility as well. But Ripley and Vega, I mean, I don't really see Zelina Vega winning, but I think it'll be an intriguing matchup. Rhea Ripley is on the best run of her career in terms of just, like, really good matches and really good character work. I am interested to see how she works with someone smaller in Zelina Vega. Very different opponent than Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania.
Yes, that is definitely the case. Yeah, I think that this is largely a case of, hey, the show's in Puerto Rico, she's Puerto Rican, and we've got this LWO Judgment Day thing going with Priest and Bad Bunny and Ray and Dominic, et cetera. So it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. And if you want Ripley on, you want to defend that title on the show, you know, she's new to SmackDown by the fact that she's a SmackDown champion, but she's still technically a Raw wrestler. So there's not like there's been a chance since WrestleMania. You don't have a lot of time to build up for a new champion. She's not, you know, it's not a rematch like a lot of backlashes in the past have had, which is good. But, you know, who else if not Zelina? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who else are you going to go to for just what's likely a one-off, you know, it's going to be Ripley winning strong with Vega doing, you know, a few hope spots and a couple of cool moves like she did on, you know, with the twisting, was it a tornado DDT or something that she did to kind of counter, you know, Ripley. You'll get some of those spots, but ultimately it'll be probably a relatively short match, put Ripley over strong, and then we'll see, you know, where things land after the draft going forward. Then you build whoever her first, you know, now that she's going to be the Raw champion, I guess. And will they trade the titles? Will they just rename the titles? God only knows what they'll do there. But whoever her next, you know, kind of main opponent is going to be, we'll have a chance after Backlash to start really building a storyline to that next challenger.
What do you think happens to the women's titles? Does Ripley get drafted to Raw and they just do like a switch or something like that, like Becky Lynch and Charlotte did? We all know how well that went over. or do they have a, if not a unification match, then a match where Belair faces Ripley and the winner gets both titles? So it's in a similar position to the tag titles and the WWE Universal titles.
I mean, I think those options were much more likely before they introduced a new world championship. And I just have to think that they are not going to be unifying anymore, and ultimately they may even split up like the tag titles too. So we'll see. So I don't see a unification happening anytime soon. I'm assuming she gets, you know, drafted to Raw and they just do the cheesy title handoff, or they just rename it or something along those lines. I'm guessing we're not going to get a match because I'm kind of thinking, you know, Bianca Ripley is a WrestleMania 40 match, whether it's for a unification at that point or it's just one of them, you know, loses the title and the other wins the Rumble, or, you know, however they get there. I could certainly see that, you know, as a real big, if done well and correctly, that could be a real big match next year. So I'm guessing with the new title that the idea of unification is kind of out the window at this point.
Let's go back to the phones. The 615 area code is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Greg, as always, it's always fun being on here with you. And John, if I have talked to you, it's been a long, long time. So, and Greg,
has.
I know this is – yes, and Greg, I want to say this is your show, and I apologize for this, but I got to praise John because a little bit ago, him, Dot Bruce, and Frank did the WWE. See, look at me. I'm botching the whole name of the show now. Look at me. I'm botching the whole name of the show. The Pro Wrestling Then and Now show. They did my favorite WrestleMania of all time, and I think they did a phenomenal job talking about it. So I wanted to praise you for that, John. I think you guys did a good job. It was a fun show.
Oh, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, I'll shout out to Frank for having me and Bruce on because we spend a lot of time on Twitter talking a lot about baseball and wrestling. But it was really fun to do that show. And Frank was like, yeah, we'll keep it to like 90 minutes. You know, like 3 hours later, get us talking about wrestling and WrestleMania. And WrestleMania 19 is also, you know, my favorite of all time. So it was a lot of fun to do. So I really appreciate the shout out there, Sean.
That show, by the way, available for PWTorch.com members. So just
two parts,
plug in there.
Two
for,
parts.
Yes.
Yes.
PWTorch.com/OVIP. Go ahead, Sean.
No, go VIP for sure. You guys have to, people. If you're not, like, think you're crazy. But anyway, I wanted to say the just going back to the draft really fast, I just wanted to bring up this one point when you guys were talking about the draft and how they did it. I mean, it was basic in the way of it was fine because of, John, you brought up 2019 when they first brought Fox onto SmackDown and how bad it was when they did the draft. And I was like, as long as they don't do that, I'm fine. I don't even care. Because they did that so cheesy. It's so ridiculous that anything's better than that. But the thing it's hard about the draft, too, is, like, you have to draft Friday. You have to draft some of the best people on SmackDown. But then you have to leave some of the best people on Raw, which is weird. Because if you're doing a draft, obviously you're wanting to draft the best people first. So it's always weird when you have to save all these people for Monday and you have this, like, draft pool you're drafting from, you know, which you would never do in the NFL. It's like you're drafting the best people. Whoever you want, you think is the best guy, you're going to draft. So that always makes it kind of interesting, too. But just a side point. Going back to Cody and Brock, I really hope to have an explanation on Monday for sure. I think Brock needs to explain why he did what he did. I just think if they don't do that, I think that's a big thread that you're just missing, and it makes it feel – even though the match is a cool match, like, there's no story, you feel like, behind it. It's like, okay, this is kind of weird. But I wanted to ask about the match, how you think the match will be laid out, because I think it's interesting in the sense of there's no intrigue of who's going to win. Like, Cody has to win. If he doesn't, it just doesn't make any sense, and you've just belittled him to a point where I don't think he can come back. But do you think it's one of those matches where Brock just kind of dominates him for a long, long time and you just kind of build the sympathy up for him, or you just kind of – because I think if you do that, Cody doesn't get a lot of offense in, so it feels kind of weird too. Or do you think it's just a back-and-forth match where they both get their spots in? How do you think that match will go? I'm intrigued by what you thought about that.
You know, given the story that they're telling, such as it is, with Cody, it does kind of feel like it's going to be – and Cody likes to take punishment. I mean, he likes to be that babyface in peril. So it does kind of – I think back to Lesnar's return against John Cena, where he just beat the tar out of John Cena. I kind of feel like it's going to be set up that way, where he just beats the tar out of Cody Rhodes. Cody ends up winning the match. But I think – and I don't – you know, I don't say that in a way to where, like, Cody lucks into a win. I think you, and I use this term again, you have to kind of thread that needle of, yeah, Cody takes a lot of punishment, but he wins in a convincing manner. It's not slip on a banana peel and beat Brock Lesnar. It's Cody Rhodes took all this punishment, he survived, and he beat the beast. It's got to be something like that, because I think it'll be set up similar to that Cena return match that that Lesnar had. John, how do you think they set this match up? You know, because I think we all agree that the idea here is to spotlight Cody and tell that story about Cody overcoming, since that seems to be what WWE wants to do, the tax that they're taking with him. Is that the best way to tell it with Lesnar?
Yeah, I agree totally. I think the Cena match is a good example. I was kind of sitting here thinking when Sean was asking the question, like, it's interesting because so many of Lesnar's recent matches have been so similar, the Lashley types, the Goldberg types. Some of them have been longer, like the Roman Reigns, not last year, not the SummerSlam one with all the all the hijinks with the tractor and everything that kind of took it in different directions. But even like the previous ones we had seen with Roman, which were longer, were still very much the same formula, just like an extended version of it. You know, this is more like Cody's more along the lines of, you know, some of his other opponents like Daniel Bryan or AJ Styles or, you know, Seth Rollins or something, where you hope you're going to get a better, longer match. You hope it's not going to be as formulaic. It's not just going to be spear, spear, you know, F5, F5, kick out, crossroads, kick out, crossroads, kick out, three German suit. You know, it's like it's got to be more than that. And to your point about the way Rhodes is kind of presented, I'm also thinking of the Hell in a Cell against Rollins, where he was just so up against it because of the real-life injury to his short pack or whatever, where and you had the visual reminder. You couldn't forget that he was very much injured going into that match, and it was such a good match. And I know some people, I think Zach Hadorn had it as his match of the year last year, at least WWE-wise. So, you know, you can go that route with it where Cody, you know, or the Cena one, as you mentioned, Cody is obviously going to take more punishment than Lesnar. I think that's going to be a for sure thing. It's just he's got to get enough offense in throughout while also taking that punishment that it doesn't just seem like a fluky kind of he's lucky to win on a roll-up in the end. He's got to get a strong 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring.
Sean, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
Yeah, so even though Backlash is – I'm looking forward to the show, even though some of the matches are kind of – you kind of, you know, you know who's going to win. But it's, and that's fine. I think some of the matches will be interesting. But I want to go back to AEW in a way because I don't get to talk a lot about it on some of these shows. But I wanted to go to kind of what you guys have thought about the Cole and Jericho stuff because – I thought the angle where they beat up Britt was, I mean, it was fine. The thing about Jericho is, and I think, I guess Wade might have brought it up on the post show after that week or maybe this last Wednesday about how it's hard with Jericho to make things so serious because he just kind of has a corny way of doing things sometimes. Like, it doesn't feel like it's real serious. And with the Cole and Jericho, it's just kind of, I'm not feeling the feud. Like, I'm excited for Cole being back as a face for sure. I just, like, this feud's not really, from what I've seen so far, it's not really doing it a lot for me. Like, I'm just not really invested in what they're trying to do. So I wanted to hear what you guys kind of thought about it, and is this good for Cole? Like, obviously, Cole needs to get the win and move forward. But what have you thought about the feud so far? Is it serious where you've been caught up in the story, or do you feel kind of disconnected from it? Where are you guys at on it?
I think it's been okay. I think the thing is that Jericho goes to the heavy heat angle so often, it does kind of lose a little bit every time he does it because I feel like they've done it very frequently. And this Britt, you know, the attack on her, while different, you know, felt similar to a lot of the heavy heat angles that he's done recently. And I feel like sometimes they go to that well too often. But, you know, I think Adam Cole feels like a fresh opponent for him, which was needed. And I think it gives Cole something meaningful to do on his return back. So I think those are all positives. I don't think the feud is sitting right now as strong as it could be. But, you know, they try. You can't say they didn't try. I mean, the Brit stuff and the attention that it's gotten, you know, certainly in some ways has succeeded in making this match and this feud feel major league. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, I think there was a story, mainstream media picked up the story with Britt too as well. So it'll be interesting to see how much, if at all, Tony Khan uses this mainstream attention to maybe build this feud up even bigger than what they were planning to make it more than just an upper mid card feud, maybe even give it more time and more TV time and more attention. But John, what have you thought of this feud so far?
Yeah, I'm not very high on it either. In part, I will also agree that it's good that Adam Cole's back as a babyface. It's always ridiculous to me to fight the fans on Adam Cole for some reason. NXT did it for a long time, and AEW did it initially. Like, they want to cheer him. Let them cheer him. So that's good, and a win over Jericho is always good, is a meaningful thing, and that can certainly propel him. I guess my issues are I get where maybe Wade or whoever was coming from with Jericho. It's hard to take Jericho seriously when he's surrounded by a bunch of goofs. And it's, hey, look, I like my purple hat. And look at me, I'm yelling. And yeah. we're gonna recruit the guys who scissor each other into our group. Oh, yeah, because they're really a serious act. You know, so that stuff. And then on top of it, I have not been a fan of, is it the Outcast? Is that what they're calling Saraya?
Yes.
That whole storyline I don't think has been good either. So when you've got the two kind of coming together with this, you know, segment where he's handcuffed and they're beating Britt Baker up, and he's, you know, just kind of overdoing it with, I'm so sorry. I was just kind of like, it's not clicking for me on that level either. So, yeah, I haven't been, and I'm sure the match will end up being, you know, probably pretty good because, A, Adam Cole is that good, and, B, even at this point in his, you know, physical, you know, shape, that Jericho's such a pro. He knows how to get as much as he can with what he has left at this point. So I'm not worried about, like, match quality or anything, but just everything around it has not been very strong. And the other issue, too, is that Dynamite is overdoing it on the beatdowns and then the babyface, you know, having to, a group of baby faces running out to make the save. And at one point, was it 2 weeks ago maybe? Or at one point, I remember literally three segments in a row ended that way. And you're just like, oh, again, here's heels beating up a baby face and here's some more baby faces coming to help. So you had this pattern of that. So when they do it again and they have to ramp it up with the kendo sticks and everything because you've already done it three times or four times over the last couple weeks. You've done some other similar angle with, you know, the Blackpool Combat Club beating down somebody and, you know, Jericho beating down somebody and some other faction beating down somebody else and then, you know, all the saves. So, well, we got to ramp it up. Well, how are we going to ramp it up? We'll add a kendo stick and handcuffs and all this stuff, and it still just came across kind of flat and cheesy. So, yeah, I'm you know, going on a little bit, and I apologize. But, yeah, that's definitely where I'm at with just the lack of enthusiasm for both storylines, and then they happen to come together in that one segment.
And your third and final question for us tonight, Sean.
Yeah, this leads me into the AEW title picture. I have not loved what they have done at all. I just think you had a story you could have told with the four pillars of AEW, but they have just gone, John, as you're talking about with the cheesiness, they've gone off the rails with this. Like MJF, again, we're all a fan of MJF. I think he's a great heel. I think he's they've had to make him the champion because he's so over, but gosh, have they blown this storyline? I just, to get back to the four-way the way they did, the question I was going to ask you guys was how you thought of the story as a whole. It just, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, because I think it's maybe 1 or 2. And do you think it's hurting the title because of this? Because I don't think any of these three guys are worthy of title shots at this point in time. I think in future they could be, but right now they're not. And I just think the way they've done the cheesy storyline with Sami laying down, and then Tony Schiavone coming in, it's been a mess. What have you guys thought about that? I want to hear your thoughts. And Greg, I will read your article. I will go back and read it on the draft, what you thought of it so far. And, John, I appreciate talking to you guys. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Thank you, Sean. Always good to hear from you. I think that it was kind of a good idea in theory, you know, to move some new blood into the main event picture with Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara and Jack Perry. I think the presentation has been the biggest miss. How the characters have been presented, how they've interacted with each other, I think has not brought out the best in each character. MJF is MJF. You know, he's done fine. Can't complain about his performances. But, you know, if you were looking to use this to elevate the other three, I'm not sure it's worked. They are coming off some big wins, granted, at the last pay-per-view. So, you know, Jack Perry getting the big win over Christian. So, you know, it's not like they don't deserve to be in the main events. It is kind of weird when you have, like, Kenny Omega and Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson and others elsewhere on the card, and you're like, you know, these guys are healthy. They've got that main event pedigree. They've been past champions. Like, why are Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara and guys who've never been in the title picture jumping ahead of them? And I guess you've got that story with the four pillars, and that sort of helps explain how they got to this point. But I just think, you know, and I go back to, you know, this is always kind of the thing in wrestling these days is, you know, you'll make the argument against the storyline, but you end up coming to that, you know, the match will be good, but
right.
Sort of the same thing you talked about with Adam Cole and Chris Jericho, the same thing we talk about with Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar too. But I think you have to think about how these wrestlers are going to be coming out of this. And obviously MJF is going to be champion coming out of this. It's probably not going to hurt anyone losing to MJF because he is just on another level than these guys, but it's a chance for them to get their feet wet as main eventers. And I really don't know. I mean, maybe Darby Allin has looked the best out of the four of the, out of the three of these guys.
100%.
He's done some good mic work that I'm not, he's done some good mic work that I'm thinking probably surprised some people, but, you know, the Jack Perry stuff and the Sammy Guevara stuff, I don't think is as good as it could have been. What's been your take on this situation, John?
Yeah, I'm in agreement again. I hate to just keep agreeing with you, but, you know, when you're right, you're right. So I think that part of the problem is, and this is a good thing in general, is they have fewer pay-per-views. So the title matches on the pay-per-views mean more than if they're monthly. But then, to me, if you're going to do something like this, maybe do it to build to it on like a Dynamite in between pay-per-views, because you got like four pay-per-view title matches, and this is going to be one of them. It doesn't feel, you know, big enough. And I think I agree totally. I think Darby has overall looked best, but especially the first few appearances, I thought he came off really well. But 2 weeks ago where he's like, wait, do I call you Jungle Boy? Do I call you Jungle Jack? Do I call you Jack? Like, he had a big swing and a miss that week to me. And overall, when Sammy Guevara is just doing the you know, heel up in the corner lounging while the two baby faces are looking like petulant children, that's not a good look for either Darby or Jack Perry in that, you know, segment a couple weeks ago. And then if you're going to do this four pillars match and everyone knows it's going to be a fatal four-way, why are we messing around with this roundabout way of getting there? Like, sometimes the simplest solution is the best. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. We all know that's where you're going. You can just make the match and say, hey, we've got three guys here who have been here along with our champion, the four of them, since the beginning. We really feel like they all deserve, you know, the match, even though they don't. You can say they do. And then just go with it and build to it that way instead of this, well, we're going to have this really weird mini tournament and he's going to pull a name out of his hat and then he's going to bribe one of them to take a dive. And I have enjoyed some of MJF and Sammy's backstage like antics together where they're suddenly best friends. And then when he tries to get in the car at the end, he's like, oh, sorry, there's no room. And it's clearly empty. Like that, there's some good stuff here and there. And as I said, some of the early mic, the first few weeks when they were starting to build to this with Darby, I thought was the best mic work, you know, he had done and in AEW. So there have been some good points, and again, there's too much talent for it not to be, I'm sure, a fun match, but it's a title match at a pay-per-view. It's got to mean more than what it's meaning right now.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go to finish out the Backlash card. We've got Seth Rollins versus Omos in a match that quite literally came out of nowhere. It just kind of feels like, let's get these guys on the card. So we saw Omos and Brock Lesnar, and that was a match about what we expected at WrestleMania. I imagine the match with Rollins is going to be a little different, but I look at this like, this is a clash of styles if I've ever seen one. I mean, Omos and Lesnar, you could kind of see what they were going for. Like, you could kind of envision that match in your mind. I'm not really sure what Rollins and Omos is really going to accomplish or what it's even going to look like. I have a hard time envisioning that match in my head. What do you think was the reasoning behind WWE choosing this from seemingly the random match generator?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question right there, isn't it? It makes no sense. And, I mean, it makes no sense from either a behind-the-scenes standpoint or from a storyline standpoint. There's no story here, and there's no logic that I can think of why they would want to do it from a behind-the-scenes standpoint. And unlike these other matches where we've talked about, hey, at least we'll get a good match in the end, that's not necessarily going to be the case with this one, I don't think. So it's really weird. If the plan is to give Rollins that first title, have him become the champion first, maybe the idea being like, hey, look, he's going to slay the giant and you can give him some other big wins and then he wins the tournament. Maybe that's what the thinking is. I'm just not sure, but it's certainly not interesting to me on any level.
Yeah. I don't really know that there's a lot more else to say about that match. Maybe after Raw. I mean, they've got one episode, so I feel like they probably need to do a little work on this match tomorrow night on Raw. We have Austin Theory versus Bronson Reed versus Bobby Lashley in a triple threat match for the U.S. title. I am all about Bronson Reed versus Bobby Lashley. Give me that match over and over again. I feel like Austin Theory is just going to get in the way here. That's kind of my take. When Reed and Lashley clashed on Raw a couple weeks ago, I loved it. And I think the fans were really into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, I would rather see that as a one-on-one match than having it a triple threat for the U.S. title. But I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I feel, you know, the same way. And I'm my guess here is that Theory gets the fluky heel triple threat win, and you continue on with Lashley and Reed one-on-one without the U.S. title involved, and that then Theory moves on to, you know, his next challenger. And if that's the case, and this is just kind of a one-off thing where you're delaying the next singles match between them in what's going to be a longer program, then I think that can work out, you know, fine in the end, as long as they both look strong enough in the match. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of big heavy spots and a lot of physicality, and the two of them taking turns squashing Theory is going to be fun. So I think it, you know, has potential, but I agree. I'm enjoying, you know, the Lashley Reed stuff and look forward to it continuing on past Backlash.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I think it's kind of a means to an end to continue the Lashley Reed story and to get Theory a win where, you know, somehow Lashley and Reed end up preoccupied with each other and Theory steals a win. Something like that. I can see it going down like that. Then we have the Raw Women's Championship, Bianca Belair against Io Sky. Tension within Damage Control, yet Damage Control stayed a group in the WWE draft. So is a breakup imminent with Damage Control? And do you see maybe this match, whether Sky wins or loses, being what leads to that breakup?
Yes. Yes to both. I assume that that's where we're going. I assume we're going to get a babyface run for Io, Bayley staying a heel and tormenting poor Michael Cole every week on SmackDown. And I'm not sure where Dakota, you know, fits into that because, you know, was somebody who was a real effective babyface in her early time in NXT. She's been an effective heel. So, you know, she can really, I think, go either way at this point. What I don't want to see is Io and Dakota coming out of this as a team still, which doesn't mean they have to be against each other. I'd like to see Io get a chance to really show what she can do as a babyface, you know, solo star on her own. And so that's what I'm hoping mm-hmm. comes out of this, and, you know, suspecting, you know, Bianca to get the win, and whether Bayley does something on accident, it's kind of like, or, you know, ambiguously accidental that might cost her. I know that's not necessarily great, but Bianca, it will be fine with a little bit of a fluky win, because she's Bianca and she's been the champion for, you know, over a year now. So she's okay at that point.
It does seem like Sky and Kai would turn on Bayley before
yeah.
Bayley would turn on them, because it feels like they're getting fed up with her. And I don't
right.
know if Bayley is, like, oblivious or, you know, whatever the case may be, but that's kind of how it feels. But you've got to do it in a way that doesn't make Bayley a babyface coming out of it either, because I think you're right. You got to keep her as a heel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've got what could be the main event, Bad Bunny versus Damian Priest in a San Juan street fight. This one shocked me, John. I thought we were going to get a six-man tag match with Ray and Bad Bunny and potentially Santos Escobar against Priest and Balor and or Dominic Mysterio involved in there as well as the Judgment Day. So, you know, maybe it was Balor's injury. I don't know how healthy he is. You know, he had the staples at WrestleMania, also had, I believe, a torn calf that he went into WrestleMania fighting. So maybe that switched things up. But are you surprised that it's a singles match between Bad Bunny and Damian Priest instead of a six-man tag?
Well, I was going back and forth between a six-man tag and a regular tag, because I thought, well, it might just be Bad Bunny and Ray against Priest and Dominic,
yeah.
or Priest and Balor, or the six-man tag that you proposed. So to answer the question, yes, I was surprised, because I wasn't sure it was going to be a six-man tag, but I did not think it was going to be a singles match either. But then once they announced that it was this San Juan street fight, I said, well, there's your in for the LWO and the rest of Judgment Day to get involved, because there's no DQ. Mm-hmm. They can have as much shenanigans as they want without, you know, breaking any rules. So we know they're going to end up, you know, getting involved at that point. And you know, that'll work out okay, because you're not going to be asking Bad Bunny to carry a, you know, a traditional singles match. Although, you know, he has shown a pretty amazing propensity for what he did 2 years ago in the tag match at WrestleMania, and then, you know, more briefly, was it last year in the Royal Rumble? So he certainly can do some things in the ring, but not to the point where you expect him to be in a solo match, as you said, potential and probable pay-per-view main or PLE main event. So it will be interesting. I think it'll be a lot of fun, but I'm sure it won't stay one-on-one very long into the match.
I do wonder, with no Roman Reigns, I mean, they have a marquee singles match in Rhodes versus Lesnar, but I wonder about the lack of singles matches, marquee singles matches may have played a part, because the other big match is the sixth man with Riddle, Owens, and Zayn against
right.
the Usos and Solo Sikoa. You got no Roman Reigns, so I wonder if they just wanted to have a key singles match, you know, male singles match on the card as well, whether that played a part either.
Well, it'll be interesting which of those three. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just saying,
no,
it'll be interesting to see which of the three, because you could easily close the show with the Bad Bunny match, you could close it with the six-man tag, or you could close it with Cody and Lesnar. So I am curious to see the order, ultimately, how they put the card together.
My feeling is probably Bad Bunny goes on last,
yeah.
just because he's a celebrity and it's in Puerto Rico. But
yeah,
I think
that's
this is one of those shows where this is one of those shows where it might depend on the finishes as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times when there's multiple options for main events, WWE will go with the one that's most satisfying.
Right.
So I think that might play a part in it as well.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to our final phone call of the evening, DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
Hey, guys. Going into this, what you guys are talking about, I want to talk about the belts. I hate that they, you know, doing this again. They're breaking them up. I don't know, like, and they're just saying, hey, Cody, here, I'm sorry, here's a belt. Like, I don't know. Like, who's really going to get this belt and hold this belt a while like Roman's doing? Like, are they going to shoot the thing on Gunther? I don't know. They got rid of Bobby. It's just like, who can really hold this belt? Lesnar doesn't work full-time. That is going to be a great champion. I don't understand. What are they doing? One champion should be enough. You know what I'm saying? Go back to each program. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, this goes kind of back to what we were talking about earlier, John, in terms of the Cody Rhodes dilemma with getting this title. The problem is, as DJ pointed out, if not Cody, then who? You know, who?
Right.
Who else? Maybe it's Seth Rollins, but there don't seem to be a lot of options. Maybe it's Drew McIntyre, although his contract situation, who knows what that's going to be. Maybe it is Gunther, although he's still Intercontinental Champion, but there doesn't seem to be, outside of Cody, a lot of options to hold this title. Does that, in your mind, make it more likely, you think, that Cody is the one here, even though we've kind of tried to talk ourselves out of that, maybe?
Well, no, I'm certainly in the camp that Rollins is the most likely, but maybe he's a little too likely, and they won't go that route. In my mind, I was like, oh, I'd love to see them put it on Lashley. And I was like, oh, wait. No, that's not going to happen. He got drafted to the other show. So, yeah, I think Rollins is probably the best option. You know, you could do something totally out of left field, and I don't think they will, but could you, you know, strap it to somebody like an Escobar and just say, we're going to just do something totally different. This guy has a ton of talent. He's great in the ring. He's really charismatic. He's a star. I don't care. I know he's undersized for WWE, but that doesn't seem to be as big an issue, you know, the last few years as in the past. You know, I would love to see them just do something out of left field with this and just make a new star with it, because it's not going to feel like a consolation prize for somebody like that to win it, because he had never, you know, had a chance against Roman the way, you know, others have. So even Drew McIntyre, he had his chance against Roman and in his home, you know, country, and he didn't get it done. So it would be kind of a consolation prize for him too, I think. So, you know, and then I'll bring up just a name, and I don't know if they got drafted or if they're in the Raw pool, so maybe this is already – the boat has already sank. It's hard to – or sailed, excuse me. It's hard to remember, but like a Sheamus is always a possibility if you want. I wouldn't think so, but I think he's a big enough name. He has to at least be mentioned in the conversation as a potential champion. And he's certainly been pretty popular and over with the fans, but – if I had to bet, I'd bet on Rollins. If I had to book, I'd pick somebody new and try to build a new star out of it.
To answer your question whether or not WWE could do that, absolutely they could, but
yeah,
they've shown no willingness to do that in the past. I mean, that is
right.
That whole, you know, make a star with the belt, that's out of the box thinking. We just have not seen WWE and Vince McMahon during his tenure booking be willing to take those kind of chances and make those kind of moves. So it's kind of like, yes, they could do it in theory, but in practice it's a whole different story, historically speaking.
Sure.
So, all right, DJ, back to you. Your second question or comment for us.
Second question is about the draft. I'm confused. In the very beginning, I could have sworn he was saying, we're going to break up these fashions, we're going to rock it up, do all these things, and then it doesn't make any sense. They broke up the worst fashion, I mean the best fashion, and then, I mean, maybe we can make new fashions because I thought that's the whole point, but no, they love fashions. But my point is this, if Bobby Lashley is going to SmackDown and the Profits is going to SmackDown, because I still think that they should have broke the Profits out because the Montel Ford is great, but I feel like the Prophet, Bobby Lashley, should join and make the new Hurt Lock. I feel like if they love fashion, that'd be great fashion compared to them breaking the Usos up when Roman Reigns, we all know, is their lifesaver, and they're going to drown without Roman, I feel like. You know what I'm saying? And then they're going
to
break up.
Well, they haven't broken the Usos up yet. They're eligible to be drafted tomorrow night, and they could be drafted back to SmackDown. So, you know, you could read into what happened on SmackDown as potentially the Usos not being with Roman, but it's not official yet.
Right, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Like, so maybe they'll build new fashions, have, I don't know, I just feel like, you know, the Ripley thing, you know, she, like you said, she might go over there because, you know, she's going to be a star. So what do you all think about Bobby Lashley and the Prophets compared to, you know, because the Prophets are real hot right now, and with a new fashion, they love fashions, because I thought they were going to break more fashions up, and they didn't, or tag teams up or something.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at that, too. I thought there were some opportunities there. I don't want to give too much away because I wrote about some of it in my column, but there seemed to be some opportunities there for WWE to go in a different direction with some of these teams and factions. And it wasn't promised, but it was said, you know, the Triple H, when he announced the draft, said that, you know, some teams could be broken up. And we haven't seen that bear out yet. So, you know, are you surprised, John, that we all the tag teams and factions have stuck together so far through at least one night of the draft?
Yeah, I think that because they've done it in the past, as we mentioned, I mentioned earlier with New Day, they've done it in the past, and they made it a selling point almost of, you know, building the – it was part of building the intrigue of the draft was clearly, hey, this might be the last time we're seeing these guys together. So the fact that they didn't do any, not that they might not, you know, we might still get some. And despite what I said earlier about, you know, not being a fan of breaking people up via the draft, something like the Street Profits is actually the way I would break them up. Because if you want them to be singles guys, which I'm certainly they both have potential to be singles breakout stars. So I'd rather see them go their separate ways amicably and still be friends and have, like, that, you know, classic, you know, wrestling tag team breakup where one becomes babyface, one becomes heel, then they have to feud. I don't have as much interest in, like, seeing them feuding against each other, but seeing mm-hmm. what they can do as singles. And so the draft would certainly be an opportunity to do that, but then you have to have the illogical thing of, like, why would the SmackDown people want one but not both when they could draft them both? It wouldn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that's part, just to go full circle with our initial talk, part of the problem with the draft is that it's so wonky and so, you know, odd how they put it together with the rules and the different rosters, one roster one week and one roster, you know, half the roster the next. It just, there's so many questions about how they do it that it's hard to counter-program, because you'd be like, well, if you wanted to do it this way, you'd really have to say everybody's all in, one pick, one wrestler. If you want Street Profits, you're going to have to take Montez this round and hope that Dawkins is still available the next round. You know, it's like, then you could do it where you could break things up and keep things together in a much more logical way than just to be like, well, wait, why weren't the Usos part of that pool to begin with Solo, Roman, and Paul Heyman? Like, and they said, like, mm-hmm. well, Roman pulled some strings and he's kind of sending a message or something like that. But it still just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I don't know, you know, we'll see what happens this week. Do we get more, you know, could they say we want Ripley on her own? We feel she's strong enough. She doesn't need the rest of Judgment Day. Could she get drafted by herself to one show and the rest of the group gets drafted to another? I mean, there's still some potential for that to happen. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
All right, DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
Last question and booking. I heard from the grapevine that SmackDown might go 3 hours. Now, if they go 3 hours, I don't know if Bobby's going to hold that extra hour or what they're going to do on that. But I just feel like the numbers, like some people were here to see, you know, their favorite wrestler. And now that there's a wonky draft, like he was saying, is it's like, do you feel like the numbers might go down on Raw because, you know, Bobby went to SmackDown or blah, blah, blah. Or at the end of the day, I hate also these single pay-per-views, one for Raw and one for SmackDown. I hate that. I love when they're all together as one. It's like so weird to me. It's like, can't clock, you know, I don't understand. I hate when they do this.
Well, SmackDown's not going to 3 hours as long as it's on Fox, because Fox has local news that starts at 10, so they can't go to 3 hours. So maybe that's in negotiations for the new deal, but that's a ways away. And I don't think they're doing maybe there were rumors about this, but brand-specific pay-per-views, that's never worked. I don't know why they would think it would work. I mean, they have a deep enough roster. Maybe they could get away with it. And maybe in this era of, you know, having all their major shows on Peacock and not asking people to pay, you know, $39.95 for a Raw brand pay-per-view that feels like an extended episode of Raw or SmackDown, maybe they can get away with it. But that's a big ask. It's never worked before, so I don't. It doesn't necessarily mean it can't work, but WWE just hasn't shown the ability to make it work, and nothing has really changed. The same person is still in charge of creative, so I don't know why all of a sudden we would think that it would change. But, John, thoughts of Raw going to 3 hours? I guess earliest you could do that is the new TV deal or brand-specific pay-per-views.
Well, God willing, that won't happen, because 3 hours is already too much for one show, and to do the other one, it's just, you know, would be crazy. I get there could be a, you know, a financial benefit, but it's just, it's really, really short-term thinking if that's the case. And we've seen over the years, I mean, Raw right now to me is a pretty good show. I enjoy it most weeks. There have been times I have not. But overall, recently, I've been enjoying it. I'm covering it in the hits and misses. I'm most weeks having far more hits than misses. But I'm also sitting there going, it would still be better at 2 hours than three, even on a great episode. So let's hope not for that. And then, the brand-specific pay-per-views, you're going to have WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, probably Survivor Series, probably Money in the Bank. And then you're going to, maybe you would have to do probably like one more combined. So then you're talking about maybe half of them doing like three Raw, three SmackDown, and six combined. You know, it could work, but at that point, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And just a real quick anecdote, I went to the No Way Out 2004, which was a SmackDown only pay-per-view at the time, and there was this family sitting in front of us. You know, the mom, dad, and this little kid who was probably, you know, 7 or 8. And he was just, Mom, Dad, is the Hurricane going to be on? And, of course, they clearly didn't know anything about wrestling and just brought the kid who was so enthused. And he just kept – so they turned to us, do you know if the Hurricane's going to be on tonight? And it was like, oh, we're sorry, you know. He's on Raw, and this is only SmackDown wrestlers. And he was so brokenhearted. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, kid. I hate to break it to you, but no, he's not going to be on. So, you know, let's not return to those days.
All right, DJ, thanks for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yep. Thanks.
All right, John, we've reached the end of the show, so I'll let you plug your stuff here, and we will sign off.
All right, great. Thank you again for having me. You can follow me at John Mazzera on Twitter, JonMezzera. And you can read my Raw hits and misses. It usually comes out, I don't know, Thursdays, depending on when I get around to sending it in and when they get around to posting it. And I was going to plug the most recent Then and Now that I was a guest on, but Sean was nice enough to do that for me, so go VIP and check out not just my recent Then and Now with Frank and Bruce looking at WrestleMania 19, as well as our reactions a few days after WrestleMania 39, but always check out all of Frank Pediani's Then and Nows. They're always a great look back at past big shows, not just WWE, but WCW shows and others as well. So that's always fun, and I always have a good time with Frank, as I always have a good time with you, Greg, when you have me on. So thanks again for having me, and I'll look forward to doing it again sometime.
Awesome. Definitely look forward to it. Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
And thank you for listening. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And as I mentioned, my column in the Torch newsletter coming up on the night one of the WWE draft. So until next week, when it's Backlash and it's Saturday, it's Wrestling Night in America.